Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
Time now for The Drive with Mark Ennis on 93.9 The Ville. The Drive is brought to you by Fitness Market, Louisville's premier location for fitness equipment and in-home saunas. Online at thefitnessmarket.com. Now here's Mark Ennis and Jeff Lightsey Jr.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Jeff Lightsey Jr. here. The phone lines, they are open, 8150-939. That's the number if you want to get in here, 3831-939 for the UPS jobs text line. If you'd like to hit us up that way as well, be happy to interact with you. That way it began to be leaked out a little bit yesterday. Ross Dellinger, as is often the case, with some news about things being considered at the NCAA level. But the reports aren't.
It looks like we may have some technical difficulties over on Mark's end of things. But yeah, Ross Dellinger, there was a report yesterday about tournament expansion, and it could be on the horizon in the near future. And again, I'm just not a fan of it. I think 68 teams, it's the perfect format right now. And any, you know, if you're trying to expand, at least give some opportunity to the other conferences out there, because the way it is right now, it's a perfect setup. And let's just take a quick break here. We'll try to see if we can get Mark reconnected on the other side here. But this is The Drive on 939 The Ville.
You're listening to The Drive, presented by Fitness Market, right here on 93.9 The Ville. Now, here's Mark Ennis and Jeff Lightsey Jr.
Apologies for that. We appreciate you guys sticking with us here on The Drive on 93.9 The Ville. Jeff, we were talking about the fact that Ross Dellinger starting to reporting that the beginning steps are being made here, proposals being thrown around to conference commissioners to expand the NCAA tournament. Something I think we can all agree with. No one's really asking for this.
Not at all.
And I was trying to make the point there. Like, I think sometimes we lie to ourselves about how much we really enjoy this sort of thing. And I'll give you a good example about this. Sometimes you'll see people say, "What's wrong with more football? I love bowl games." Right. And while I'm going to turn them on, usually I don't care about them at all. Virtually any bowl game, but especially a lot of like the mid to somewhat late December bowl games, I don't care about them. Virtually no one cares about them. If they went away, like the proof that people don't love them and more football is good is not true. Is like if say 15 bowl games went away, no one would care.
Not at all.
No one would care whatsoever.
Like, not even a little bit. Now, expanding to 72, it's just cool, I guess. Like, I don't know. It's not.
Is it? I'm asking. Let's be real. Like, just no, because it's not, more though. Tournament games doesn't mean it's cool. Because
it's not. You're right.
We added more play-in games. Instead of there just being, what, like one or two? Mm. Now there's four?
Yeah.
Do you go out of your way to watch them all?
No. I don't even fill out my bracket until they're over.
Like, you wait to find out?
Yeah, wait to find out. What am I doing? What am I doing that for? Like, I don't even know who the... Like, you're telling me there's three options here? Nah, I'm going to just wait till there's only two.
You know how hard it was last year. I really got my six-year-old. She wanted to be in the bracket contest with us, so I sort of helped her pick teams throughout. To explain to her why that one was blank.
Yeah, I bet.
And how we had to wait. She's like, what? Like, no idea what that was at all. But...
I don't need to see Virginia play Colorado State again. Like, that game was totally unnecessary last year.
Especially when you had like more of those.
Yeah, especially when you had like teams like Indiana State or St. John's on the bubble. It's like, really, you want to watch Virginia score 30 points again.
And can we still talk about like last four in, first four out, all that stuff? Whenever we get 72 teams or 78 teams in or 76 or whatever, like, what's the point even that? Like, if you can't be a top 80 school in the country, I don't need to know why you didn't make it. If you can't be in the top 80 or 75 or whatever, I don't need the explanation. Well, they should have did it. I don't need that. Like, we can almost do away with that completely if as long as we continue to expand things. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. But the other option they wanted to do was take away automatic bids, and that made even less sense than this. This still doesn't make any sense. Trying to take away automatic bids didn't make any sense because your favorite school didn't get in or whatever. I don't know. 72 teams just seems excessive. I'm a watch, but will I watch to the extent to where they need to continue to expand the tournament? No. I thought it was cool at 64. I think it's cool at 68. 72, 76, 80 teams. I think this is insane. I don't think it's too much.
Yeah, I think the funny part about it is there have been teams that have played their way from the play-in rounds all the way to the Final Four.
Yes.
More than once. Mm-hmm. And I still don't care about them. Like, knowing that it would be wrong to mentally just dismiss these games as not mattering, mm-hmm. I still think they don't matter. Like, it does not make me more inclined to watch them because of what Spencer just said. Like, there was nothing about Virginia, Colorado State that was, I was like, one of these teams could be in the Final Four. Like, I just, you can't make me think that.
And
I don't need eight more of them.
Not at all. And to think also, the upsets are cool in the beginning. But once those teams make it to the Final Four, that hurts the NCAA. Like, if one of those play-in teams make it to the Final Four over a Kentucky or a Duke or a Kansas, like, yeah, it's fun in the moment when Oakland beats Kentucky. But if Oakland keeps winning, and how much, like, the powers that be, the people that this even matters to, which is TV people, ESPN, Turner, all these people, like, they rather see Kentucky. Because Kentucky brings a number that Oakland doesn't, that, you know, St. Peter's doesn't, that whoever doesn't. And the deeper you get into the tournament, the more people, whether they're going to admit it publicly or not, want to see the names that they recognize. They want to see the Dukes, the Kansases, the Louisvilles. They're going to tune in for those games as opposed to tuning in masses to the games with St. Peter's and Oakland. And the numbers bear that out. Like, that's why you're seeing the women's game get higher numbers than the men's game at this point. And part of it is because of the thing that sports fans say they love so much, but in all reality, maybe don't. The numbers don't show that, and that's parity. Like, parity. The parity shows that we'd much rather watch dynasties, whether it's to root against them, to hate watch, or to love watch, or whatever, versus the parity and the little guy, especially continuing to make it further and further in the tournament. They don't like that.
I mean, Texas. 2 years ago, we had, you know, sorry, Mark, but 2 years ago we had Florida Atlantic, and you had San Diego State, and San Diego State went the buzzer. But because there were two mid-major teams, most people didn't care. Like, I care because I'm a junkie and I'll watch any matchup as a tournament matchup in front of me. But it's like, yeah, the ratings don't necessarily bear out that game was a great game because the matchup, you know, looking at it, it's like, okay, cool, you got two Cinderella schools, but I'm not a fan of either of these schools. But I always love when the little guy makes it, but that's just me. I might be the minority there.
I think part of that, too, is, like, there are Cinderellas we like, but the problem was they all had to play UConn.
George Mason beat UConn. That's back in 06,
yeah,
sure.
A long time ago, right. But, like, those teams, like, UConn made everything just sort of feel inevitable. It felt like.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you were going to get great ratings for anybody. Mm-mm. In those games. Sometimes Cinderella, it's got to be somebody that there's, like, it's just being a low seed isn't enough to make people, like, there's got to be something compelling about you too. Mm-hmm. You got to feel like some sort of miraculous overachiever too, instead of like that that UConn team that wins a championship with Kevin Ollie. Like, that was Cinderella.
It was.
No one rooted for them.
Not at all.
I mean, we did because it was Kentucky, but like no one remembers that team, and like, it's charming. They're like, those guys just kind of goofed around all year and then got serious, yeah, coming to, yeah, tournaments.
Somehow, some way, they, yes, just made this 1-6, yep, incredible games.
Yeah.
I mean, but NC, like, State this past year, as the 11th seed, they were 10 in the ACC tournament, and then make this run to the Final Four. It's like, okay, DJ Burns, he's a fun guy, so I'm going to watch and root for this guy. But, yeah, I mean, before the ACC tournament, I didn't really give a damn about NC State one way or another.
Okay, I will say, that is a a very, very, very specific category that's true. If you have a delightful fat player, people will go, they will fall all over themselves to watch you in basketball. That's true.
Oh, that's true. And especially if he's pretty good, too.
Also, yeah, he's got to be, it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, he was good.
And that's what was going to happen with Indiana State if they had made it.
Yeah. Robbie Avila, yeah.
The problem is, like, let's say they expand this thing to 72. None of us believe for a moment that that's going to mean more Indiana States. Mm-mm. It's going to be more 16 and 14 Florida.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. Because you want to, once again, you want to have more of a chance of eyeballs following that team. And as good as Indiana State wants to be, they only have so many fans. Like, they don't have the fan base that like a Florida has, or even like a Texas A&M or somebody. Like, it's somebody like that who's going to get in over the 28-win Missouri Valley Conference non-conference champion. Like, it's still going to be a one-bid league. Like, no matter how big this thing expands, places like Missouri Valley, Conference USA, all these places are still going to be one-bid leagues. You're still going to have to win your conference tournament to get in because they don't want more of you. They want more of the big guys. And once again, that even, to me, makes it even more pointless to expand. If you're not going to let in more of the Indiana States of the world and instead let in more Vanderbilts or whatever.
Yeah, I dislike the idea because I think so often, by the time we get to that 68th team, the vast majority of us don't think that team deserves to be there. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a battle, really, of two teams that don't deserve to be there. And the drop-off after that, the next four teams, say from 69 to 72, they stink.
Yeah.
They've been more bad than good. There's never a team that you look at, you're like, I would be afraid to play those guys. Never. Mm-mm. Never. And yet now that we're just going to pile them on. Is it gambling?
It is. It's definitely. I mean, it's the only thing. Because you can bet on these things. That's why they continue to expand. That's why they continue to add games. Because the gambling thing is something, it's something that we can't put back in the bottle. And as gambling continues, because it's not even legal in every state yet. So as it continues to expand, that's why these things won't stop. And that's why I was like, it's inevitable. We're talking about it as if, when it happens. Because it's going to happen. That's the thing. It's going to happen on those, especially with those bigger schools. Even if they're not any good, I can recognize their players for the most part because they played my favorite team. They play in my conference or whatever. So I can at least bet on that. I may not bet on the score of the game, the win, but I can bet on player props. And that's a whole genre in itself. Like, I can bet that, I've seen enough of them, I've heard enough about Colorado or whatever, that I know they'll score under X amount of points and a half. Like, because gambling sites are so intricate. You can go quarter to quarter, half to half, player to player, and then you can bet on the player during the half. Like, it's just incredible. But that's why this machine will continue to push forward. I'm not a fan. But at the end of the day, the money rules, and there's a lot of money in those sports books.
Like, Seton Hall won the NIT last year. Like, if they made the NCAA tournament, like, how far realistically they've gone? Maybe the Sweet 16 if they got a lucky draw and they, played out of their mind for a couple games? Maybe, but reality is they probably lose either that play-in game in the first four or the next round in the first round. Like, that, it's just, like, what are we doing? We're adding teams that... It's like, okay, cool. Like, they get to hang a banner if it's like a smaller school, which we don't think it will be more often than not. It's like, oh, tournament appearance. Like, you keep your streak going for making the tournament. And it's like Tom Izzo's been to have many tournaments in a row because he keeps making the first four every other year.
Like, they're going to make new seed levels rather than just let him not make the tournament 1 year with Izzo. Now, I understand that. I don't love this. But it seems pretty obvious they're going to go forward with this, so whether any of us like it or not. And I'm sure that a lot of this has to do with something that's weighing on the hearts and minds of every athletic department in the country, which is coming up with revenue-sharing money for players going forward. I know Tim Sullivan had posted kind of a quick little thing that he had talked to Josh Hurd about the fact that, like, they're going to have to streamline some things and reimagine, I think, pay structures and such for, I think on like the administrative side, if you want to keep sports robust, and I feel like you probably have no choice, but like Ohio State's coming out today, we're going to pay the full amount. In Illinois, we're going to pay the full amount. And I'm sure that Louisville's going to want to too. Every external way of maybe getting just a little bit more revenue from TV and that sort of thing, they're going to say yes to.
Absolutely. You know, you can't turn it down at this point because, like you said, everybody's pocketbook isn't the same. And so, therefore, you have to be able to make up the deficit, especially when these Big Ten schools who do get a ton of money from their TV deals are coming out saying, yeah, we got it. We don't worry about it. Like, hey, I don't know what they're going to do over there in the ACC. I don't know what they're going to do over there. But here at our schools, you're going to be able to have it. And we're going to make sure you know it, Ohio State, Illinois, whoever else. We're going to make sure you know that if you want to be paid your full allotment, you can come here and get that. And if the allotment is going to be roughly around that $20 million mark, yeah, we got that. We got it. I don't know about everybody else. But just know here at Ohio State, if you come here, the $20 million allotment is going to be allotted. Like everybody's going to get it. And we still have our NIL collective as well. If that's still a thing. If it's going to be still a thing, we're going to have that too. So,
if there's... I do wonder about the future of collectives. Because I think athletic departments would probably love to not have to go about that sort of thing.
I think they just get absorbed.
But no fan base, if you've got an effective one, is going to want to give up on that as a tool.
No.
Like, if I'm Louisville, I don't want collectives to necessarily go away. It's working.
It is. Yeah. That's why I think they'll just be absorbed. It'll be a part of the athletics infrastructure. And I think some of, you know, I don't know if Louisville saw this coming, but, like, if you just think about Louisville's 502 collective, like, Dan worked for the university before working for the collective.
Yeah.
Right. And so
maybe, and a lot of teams have done that.
And so maybe you just always knew this was coming. So it just makes sense. I assign a guy that works for us, worked for us, knows us, do all that stuff. It makes the streamline of communication perfect because we all know each other. We all worked with each other and everything. And then when something like this comes out, it makes it easy for all of us, even if we have to absorb them, if collectives technically go away, but it's still a part of what we do here at the university. Well, we have our guy over there, and we just move in his office, essentially. Everybody does the same thing. We're just moving offices from one building to the other, meaning if we absorb you guys, we're all in this together like we were this entire time. Instead of just working in two separate buildings, we're working in this under the same roof. And I think that is potentially what's just going to happen at places like Louisville.
I do. I wonder. What I think is interesting is you start to see some of the quotes from other athletic departments and such about, it doesn't seem like schools know what the Title IX implications are at all.
Yeah.
Because you've got that's some schools saying, thing. Like, we're gonna abide by the letter of the law, and you got some schools that are like, we might try to tailor it to where it's more commensurate with, like, the student body enrollment and stuff, like trying to sort of finagle the numbers towards probably football. Like, let's just be real.
Absolutely.
Here. And that sucks.
This is,
but what do you do?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, when you own all the cash or you produce all the cash, the rules are going to favor you. Like, and if they don't, we'll do our own thing. Like, that's what football, college football can say that. Like, hey, y'all deal with the Title IX, NCAA. Basically, let us do our thing. Because if you don't, we will just completely break away from you. We already own our own our playoff. Like, NCAA don't get nothing from college football playoff. Like, we already own that. And if you want to make us own the individual games too, then we'll do that if you try to enforce some kind of Title IX stuff on us. Because the money that we make come from the guys that play football. And so if we're going to continue to reap all the benefits of the money from football, then you better leave us the hell alone when it comes to that. I think that's the approach that they're taking. They're taking, like, a bully approach. And they have all the leverage in the world because if the NCAA comes and gives them any kind of pushback, they will get. They don't agree on a lot of stuff. All the ADs and football coaches and stuff, they don't agree on a lot of stuff. They'll come together on this.
Yeah.
Hey, we're enforcing some Title IX rules their way. The women have to have the same as them. They'll get together real quick and say, no, 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 no. We'll actually, matter of fact, NCAA, we don't need you guys. You guys can stay over there. We're just going to take this football thing with us, and y'all can figure everything else out and deal with the Title IX and all that stuff. And we'll vote with each other to disband Title IX in football anyway. And I think that's something they'll do.
Everything would just be so much better if football didn't matter. And I love football.
It would.
But it's such an outlier.
And it's so lopsided, too.
It's like, yeah. Huge. Mm-hmm. And there's no women's sports equivalent of it or even close to it. But it's also the one that we are all fiends for.
Yes.
And so everything that gets, like, there's nothing, I think at this point, there's nothing that won't be sacrificed for football.
It is not. I mean, you're right. Because we're talking about billions of dollars when it comes to football annually. Not what, like, the tournament produces $1 billion. I mean, in the NCAA tournament, every year it produces about $1 billion, which is a huge number. College football produces billions of dollars annually outside of just one tournament. And now their tournament, the college football playoff, has expanded. And so that in itself is going to be multi-billion. I mean, ESPN paid $7 billion for it just to broadcast it. Just to broadcast, they made $7 billion. And so that is, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And like you said, there is no equivalent to it anywhere. Even whether it's men, women, whatever, there's no equivalent to it. And every rule change that has come through the NCAA, almost, especially for the last decade, but probably longer than that, has been directly because of football.
Yeah.
Whether it's conference realignment, NIL, transfer portal, it's all been almost directly direct implication of whatever's happening in the college football sphere. And maybe basketball guys, especially with the NIL, I'd say, were more vocal. Like, they were doing a lot of Edelman, and a lot of those guys were doing more of the lawsuits earlier. But it got pushed through because of the money that is being made, spent, and delivered in college football, for sure. It's crazy. But, yeah, things would be so much different if that didn't matter. You're 100% right on that.
I know we talked earlier about J.J. Redick and the Lakers. The Bulls just traded Alex Caruso to Oklahoma City Josh Giddey. And it seems like Bulls fans are not thrilled about this, but Oklahoma City fans are.
Yes, that is.
And should be.
That is very much the reaction.
I don't know how anyone's going to really score in Oklahoma City. Like, that's going to be a ridiculous defensive lineup.
And, you know, Giddey has his reputation throughout the league. It's not a positive one. And so getting him out, it's a net positive just getting him out the building if you're OKC, just based on, you know, his care, you know, what he's perceived, his perception around the league. And you're adding a veteran. We know in the NBA, young teams don't win. Like, they don't win championships. Yeah. They win a lot, and OKC has a really, really good team, but it's super young. I mean, their team is, like, younger than Purdue. Like, their roster was younger than, like, Purdue's roster last year. And Purdue's a college team. And so to add a guy that's 30, that's had playoff success, that's still playing really, really good basketball, that can hit threes and defend, because you don't need a guy that can come in and score 20 points per game. You don't need that.
Right,
but you
that's
need
not the need.
You need a guy that can play defense, that can hit open threes, and that's a good teammate and good for the locker room. And you're adding that in Alex Caruso. It's a great pickup for them. And you need a player that's going to eat up some salary because they have a bunch of cap space and a bunch of picks that they'll be able to try to package, eat up some salary. And then in Chicago, you get a young guy that has a ton of potential. He's a top 10 pick. So that's why you do it. And you're rebuilding. So you add him to your young cast, you know, group of cast. But I like this for OKC a ton. I like this for them a whole lot, especially if they want to continue to, you know, up the ante in the Western Conference, which the Western Conference is loaded. So you got to continue to try to get better each and every single year, especially since you have that superstar in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I mean, yeah, Mark and I talked about this yesterday, but, like, the West is still loaded. Like, yeah, Dallas made it a run to the NBA Finals, and that's commendable, but the West is still really deep because, and this is before any moves had happened yet, OKC adds a guy like Caruso who's been on the all defensive team the last 2 years. And like Mark said, like, who's scoring on this team next year? Because they are going to be feisty. They were the one seed for a reason. And you add a guy who's perennially all defense. I can't wait to see what the moves they're making for agency at this point.
Lou Dort, Chet Holmgren protecting the rim. Obviously, Shai has averaged 30 the last 2 years, first team all NBA. Like, this is a really, really good team that could very easily be one of the teams to win the West next year. Like, we know Minnesota's
and the West is
up.
Full of teams that could win the
exactly.
West next year.
Exactly. Between Minnesota, Denver is going to want revenge. Obviously, Dallas just made it to the NBA Finals. And OKC adding a veteran to all that young talent, man, that's a great pickup, though.
And the Spurs have Wimby.
They do.
And now the Lakers have J.J. Redick.
Oh, God. Ugh. Don't remind me, Mark. Everybody's making moves out of here. Spurs got 2 top 10 picks and Wimby. Obviously, all the teams we just mentioned. And the Lakers say, you know what? Instead of, like, acquiring talent and making moves, free agency trades, whatever, we're just going to go hire a guy that does a podcast with our best player. That's what we're going to do. While everybody else is making these life-altering moves, we're going to go hire J.J. Redick. Act like we were going to for Dan Hurley and actually hire J.J. Redick, like Shams told us a month ago. So,
Shams world, man. All right, let's go ahead and take our last break. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up here. A couple of little things that I wanted to get to here to wrap things up on The Drive on Attendeville. Right back.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
You're listening to The Drive, presented by Fitness Market, right here on 93.9 The Ville. Now, here's Mark Ennis and Jeff Lightsey Jr.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Jeff Lightsey Jr. A couple of grab bag items here before we wrap things up here. I did want to mention an interesting story from Matt Baker with Tampa Bay Times on how, unlike Florida State, who I think we can all agree just been some real a-holes about their attempted exit from the ACC, while Clemson is no less determined to figure out what it would cost them to get out, they have at least tried to be classy about it. Yeah. I don't know how else to say it than that.
Cordial, classy, yeah.
They've not – it has looked like to me – Florida State not only wants out, they want to do damage on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Clemson wants out, but wants it to be like an amicable divorce, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want you guys to hurt, but we got to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Florida State, you guys suck. All of our problems are your fault, and I hope you die when we leave.
And we want everybody to know about it.
Yes.
Whereas Clemson has kind of played the background role, like we only know that they want out because of the reporting. But it's not like Florida State's like, hey, we want out. Like, we're on a megaphone, and we're letting the world we want out and let the world know that these guys stink. Whereas Clemson is like, oh, yeah, we want out. But
and you really don't see tell like Clemson fans and media doing a lot of that either.
No, not at all.
And every FSU person does. All of them. All of them.
All of them.
It's obnoxious.
It is pretty insane. You would think that, like, FSU thinks they're bigger and better than what they really are. That's what 100%. Always. That's what always like bothers me. Like, you would think that they've won 10 national championships in the last, you know, any time, but especially in like the last decade. Like, yeah. You don't think they just won every national championship, football, basketball.
Well, they haven't, but it's our fault. They would if the ACC wasn't so terrible. Like, they got to have the right tools.
And you would think that like everybody's clamoring for them too.
Oh, right. Right.
When that's like the complete opposite. Like if
we haven't watched the Big Ten, the SEC add a dozen teams over the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
and not them,
not
which
once.
Has to drive them crazy.
Like there hasn't even ever been a rumor of like the SEC. Like I think somebody asked, like, would you guys take Florida State? And they're like, well, maybe. Maybe we would.
I mean, in the 90s, amazingly, they tried, and Florida State said no. In the very, very early 90s. Which... Bobby Bowden didn't want to be in the same league with Alabama and Auburn.
Well, yeah. I couldn't understand that. He was winning a lot then. And once again, this was before football ruled all TV contracts conferences, everything. It was before these numbers became so crazy. But now that the numbers are in, you're like, because what value does Florida State bring to these conferences at this point? The way they're currently constructed, all you're doing at this point, like, our numbers are going to grow as far as, like, viewership. Well, we already at the top of the line on that.
Yep.
And all you're going to do is take a piece of the pie. You're just slicing the pie, adding one more, you know, person to the pie. You're like, I like our cut. We don't want to cut our cut in half or cut it in by a third or whatever. Like, no. I like the cut that we're getting.
So the only way I see, like, Florida State ever getting into, like, the Big Ten or SECs is if they do, like, a European soccer, like, pro-rel thing where it's like, okay, you know, like, Maryland and Rutgers and Nebraska, you guys move on out and let's bring Florida State and Clemson in. That's the only scenario I could see. Even then, I don't even know if that's how feasible it is to necessarily kick out a conference member.
Interesting, or I guess of note here, the article points out, again, this is Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times, that the ACC and Clemson discussed an agreement that would prevent either side from suing the other one before August of last year, and that this was all in a part of documents attached to the lawsuit that now exists. They discussed via emails back and forth a non-disclosure agreement as one of the exhibits that was attached, and that would allow them to at least start talking and negotiating without it being public and without it being part of a lawsuit or anything like that. And the language, I think it said, is the ACC's attorney wrote, neither party would initiate any claim or demand or file any complaint with any court before August 1st of this upcoming year. But ultimately, of course, they were not able to work it out. And primarily, I think it's because Florida State went ahead and did what they did. Clemson wanted to go ahead and get the ball rolling first, or at least not let them get too far ahead of them. So thanks again, Florida State. But the paperwork and such, it said the league agreed to work with Clemson seeking a business solution rather than resorting to litigation, and that Clemson indicated they desire to work with the conference regarding its own membership. The email correspondence appears to verify that claim. One of Clemson's outside attorneys wrote that the school officials would continue a conservative approach and thus will not plan to attend the briefings on the ACC's dispute with FSU. So they were like, hey, we'll stay out. Mm-hmm. And then that way, you know, we're not being hypocrites or doing anything contradictory. The Clemson's lawyer said, I want to make clear that while the burden was on the ACC to protect information, should you receive requests, Clemson would not respond by producing these things that they would want to maybe keep silent until they come up with something. FSU and Clemson are pursuing similar but separate claims against the ACC. Both are seeking clarity on how much it would cost to leave the league. The exit fee alone is about $140 million. And the value of future TV money puts the total cost at more than $500 million apiece. I do not see how that's something that any reasonable adult would approve.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, we're going to approve $500 million in exit fees so we can make $19 million more a year in TV money.
If that. That's if.
Rather
than
just go 12-0 and make the playoff every year.
Yeah.
Like you kind of do now.
And that's the thing. The whole point of this, and that's why Clemson is going about it very.
I appreciate them being.
Yeah, they're being diplomatic about it.
Not jerks about it.
Yeah, they're being diplomatic about it. But they're trying to reduce that number. That's the whole
point. I'd be much more inclined to reduce theirs than Florida State's.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, the ACC's also not dumb. Like, okay, I reduce it. So from $500 million to $300 million. You're still not going anywhere. You're still not going to do it. But at least we negotiated, and I can say I negotiated in good faith, because I'm not going to let you go, though. Like, because you signed it. That's the thing. The ACC, you could say they struck a bad deal with ESPN or whatever, but what they didn't do was trick these ADs and presidents.
Yeah,
They didn't trick them.
And Florida State acts like they did.
And that's the biggest gripe that I have with them, because you signed, you knew what this contract was. Like, you knew all the potential that the Big Ten, Big 12, maybe you didn't think they, SEC, maybe you didn't think they could get those numbers that they're getting, but you knew that they were negotiating and we were negotiating. Yeah. You knew that we were signing a 15-year deal with ESPN. You knew what our numbers were going to look like over the course of the years, and you said, man, that sounds good, to get $40 to $50 million a year. You said that. Like, you did. Nobody tricked you. Nobody put a gun to your head and made you do it. You thought that was a good deal when we signed it. Now, the SEC adds Texas and Oklahoma. The Big Ten adds all the Pac-12 schools. I mean, nobody predicted that. Hell, there was an alliance that said none of that was going to happen. Then it happened. Yep. And so, therefore, that changes the price for them. You can act like you were tricked, or you can act like we didn't know. Now, should the ACC have been more aggressive, especially after Texas and Oklahoma, been more aggressive for those Pac-12 schools? Absolutely. Not disagreeing. But that doesn't change the fact that they weren't, and that happened, and you still signed this contract. So that's my only thing. It's like, man, you signed the contract. You're at the beck and mercy of them now, meaning Jim Phillips and the ACC. And if they want to say, hey, $500 million is the price, $500 million is the price we agreed to when we signed it, $500 million is the price that we're going to stand on, and you can moan all you want, be in moan all you want, but that's what you agreed to. If they want to reduce it to $300 million, it's still number.
By the way, and that number being indeterminate right now and potentially being awfully large is why I would suspect nobody else is interested in trying to leave, because you'd be leaving your part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that payout, because like that gets distributed to everybody.
Yes.
Like there are going to be people who want Louisville, say, in the Big 12 or something. Like maybe, but not until that money gets distributed first.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of money to be had there.
Absolutely.
And Texture does say that even though Clemson's trying to do the same thing as FSU, that sucks. At least they aren't acting like spoiled children about it. If I'm another league or another broadcast partner, I'd much rather deal with Clemson than Florida State.
Without question. And
that's the part I don't understand. Is like, why would you, if Florida State, the way they're acting, why would you want that in-house?
I wouldn't. And once again, how much more valuable can my conference be? Because there's only two conferences. If you're going to leave the ACC, there's only for two conferences. But how much more valuable are you to my conference to give you our cut of $100 million a year? Like, if you're coming to my conference, you're coming at a reduced rate. And you know what that reduced rate will look like? What you were getting from the ACC.
Oh, I know. It's why I'm rooting for Oregon over the Big Ten this year.
Like,
so bad.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's either going to be what you're getting currently or less. Like, or less, we are seeing schools, when the Big Ten, after they took USC and UCLA, all those other schools, they're coming in at a reduced rate.
Yep.
The SEC, if they were to add anybody else, you're going to come in at a reduced rate. Hell, the ACC is taking schools for reduced rates or nothing. Like, SMU said, hey, let us in the conference, we'll pay for ourselves. And you don't believe we could do it? We just raised the most money in the history of sports, $159 million. For our athletics department over the course of 1 year that we were able to raise, even though our enrollment is 6,300 students. Like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
And so that is the model now, because other schools, you're going to have to explain. I'm not going to vote you in, Florida State, if that means it's going to take a chunk out of my pockets, especially now that we have this new $20 million bill that we all have to cover. We all have to cover 20 extra million because of the new rules. And you think I'm going to take a piece out of my cut to give to you? Hell no. Like, no, it's not happening. It's not happening. There's not a shot that's going to happen. Is that fight worth it? Is that fighting the ACC worth going to a conference with a reduced, if not nothing, type of rate? That doesn't even make sense.
Doesn't make sense to me either. But they're both determined to do it. Part of me thinks on some level, like, these schools are doing this, at least in part, because, like, it placates their own alumni. They don't like the idea of being here, and they really can only mobilize them for this fight, not dig in and let's just make the best of where we are. That doesn't excite people. But fighting the Sioux and getting one of the big boy leagues where we never have to worry about PR again, they'd much rather do that, even if it's going to cost them $500 million.
What's even funnier about it, the aspect with Clemson, it's like, Clemson had won a national championship in the 80s, but like the Dabo era of Clemson is really what made Clemson football Clemson.
Sure.
But now that's not the same. Like, you don't have the same allure because you don't take transfers as you did 5, 6, 7 years ago. Like the Deshaun Watsons and the Trevor Lawrences, like those guys are gone. And you haven't shown in this NIL era, in this transfer portal era, that you can get one of those guys. Now, you're still getting NFL defensive linemen, NFL athletes, wide receivers, running backs, all that stuff. Like, you're still doing that. But the difference at the collegiate level a lot of times is that quarterback position. And you haven't shown in this era that you can get one of those guys that you were getting before these rules were rules, before these things were legal.
Yeah.
And your value moving forward, the more 8-4 seasons you stack on top of each other, your value isn't going to be the same. You're not worth it to the SEC or the Big Ten anyway right now. But you damn sure won't be worth it with three more seasons of 9-3 or 8-4 in the ACC in this current conference you're trying to get out of. Like, that's not going to work either. So I may not want to be fighting as much and instead focus on being the best of the ACC again before actually trying to leave the conference.
I keep forgetting that Malik Cunningham is in Baltimore.
He is.
And playing at wide receiver?
Yes, he is.
It seems like they really like him.
From all reports, yeah.
And I know he made a good impression on
New England.
On New England and Bill Belichick, but he's a wide receiver, so I don't think that counts because Belichick doesn't know anything about wide receivers. He's terrible at wide receivers. I think Spencer would have to agree with me. He's horrible.
This is very true.
Yeah, Edelman guy, who knows what he could have done if he had a good wide receiver coaching.
Shut up. He's the exception that proves the rule. Won't you rattle off them first round picks?
N'Keal Harry won.
Yeah, it is.
That's what I'm talking about. I hate that pick so much.
I'm sure you do. How surprised are you that he's getting a look, I guess, even as a wide receiver, and not more of like kind of an X, like a mixture kind of a position there? Because he's obviously in the open field crazy.
Yes.
But also, I felt like every single time he got tackled, I expected him to be hurt. And that, you know, quarterback, you can at least sort of all the rules protect you and that sort of thing. Wide receiver, not so much. You think he'll make it?
I think so, man. I remember being way back, you know, when he was at Louisville, I said, Malik is an NFL player. He's just not an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, Malik is an NFL athlete, and that's not easy. Like, that is not an easy, that's not an assertion you just put on everybody. But if you watched Malik Cunningham play football, and especially when he tucked the ball in and ran, like, oh, that's an NFL athlete. Like, he looks different than other guys on a high-level collegiate football field. He looks different. And so I always knew he was an NFL player. The reason why I'm not surprised, and the reason why they wouldn't put him at, especially, I'm particularly talking about Baltimore, and this is why there's not a chance of him playing quarterback, but there was in New England, because they have that guy already. Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Like they have a better version of whatever that could be. Whatever the best version of Malik at quarterback could be as an X type of weapon, Lamar's better. Yeah. So like they already have that. So that's why it's like there's no point of wasting time doing that. Because any time with Lamar off the field is stupid. So there's no point of we're not even gonna mess around with that. That's a waste of time. But we do like you as an athlete. And we lack it wide receiver. We lack it outside playmakers. We just do. And so if you can add to that room, and you can be as explosive and elusive and without getting hurt as I've seen you be at the collegiate level so far, because we haven't really seen it at the pro level, but we've seen you in practice against other pros, then I want to tap into that and what that could potentially be than wasting plays with Lamar Jackson out on the field. Like that's just wasting
plays. Yeah, what are we going to take Lamar out for
this? Come on. Like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? Because whatever the best version of that is, Lamar's better. Like, he's better than the best version, so whatever the – best case scenario, I know Lamar could have did that and probably would have made it look cooler doing whatever that could be. That's no disrespect to Malik, but it's just the truth.
Yeah. So the Ravens, like they're the official team website, BaltimoreRavens.com, they've got a good kind of a lengthy article up on, you know, with Beckham gone now, they're, you know, they need, you know, the wide receiver role is primarily going to fall with Bateman and Flowers.
Yes.
But like that third wide receiver spot, he's got a shot.
Yeah.
He stood out at OTAs, and they said in particular, it looks like what they really like about him, he plays with kind of his quarterback knowledge, you know,
and
in
smart
mind.
Too. Yes.
And there are some read and react stuff that you ask a guy to do, and you'd like to think that a quarterback would read and react better.
Yeah.
As a wide receiver. I think he's got a chance to make the team and be
play
a part of what they do.
Yeah, I think he can play because, like I said, Malik is a really, really good athlete. If he can stay healthy, he's definitely going to make the team. He's definitely going to – and I think he's going to see significant snaps. Because this, once again, this isn't just this all-world Baltimore receiving core.
Right.
Like Bateman and Zay Flowers were first-round picks, but they have their struggles. Like,
and everybody else is whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Bateman and those guys don't always stay healthy either. Like, Bateman missed a lot of time last year. Like, Zay Flowers – he is not the biggest, the most over physical, over imposing player either.
Yeah.
So if Malik can go in there, make some catches preseason, make a couple of guys miss, show his explosion and his elusiveness and his and the run at the what we're talking about, the run after the catch, because that's one thing in open field. I like Malik Cunningham against a lot of people.
Sure. Same.
I like Malik against a lot of people in the open field. I've seen him make folks look silly. So you give him the ball in the open field, if he's able to use that quarterback knowledge, which has helped other former collegiate quarterbacks at the wide receiver position, whether it's Edelman, they talk about Edelman earlier, or Antoine Randall or all these different guys that played quarterback in college and then wide receiver in the league, it helps. It definitely doesn't hurt.
I think the big thing with him is I think he's got to learn to be tackled more smartly than he like he gets himself hurt. Yeah. You know, he's almost looks like a lot of his tackles, especially open field stuff over the years, were like little miniature car wrecks sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cuz he's not the biggest of guys.
Yes.
He's not big.
He's you know, in the same way, like, or the opposite way that we say, like, Lamar, it seems like nobody ever hits him square. It seems like everybody hit Blake Cunningham square all the time.
Yeah.
And he's not going to make it like that.
Mm-mm. Can't have to be smart about it. Have to, you know, pick and choose your battles. Sometimes going up against a 235-pound linebacker isn't a battle you want, right? Sometimes it's okay to get down. Sometimes it's okay to get out of bounds. Sometimes it's okay to take the Tyler Lockett approach.
live to fight another day, right?
Especially as a smaller receiver. Like, Lockett's not very big. Malik's not very big. You have to, like, your best ability is availability. And if you're not available because you're taking square, you know, taking hits on the chin, getting hit square, not getting out of bounds when you have the chance, that's not going to work. So, yeah, I like Malik. His chances to make the roster. I like his chances of making some plays. Simply because I know he's a playmaker, and if he gets the ball in his hand for receiving core for a team that's always looking to continue to be explosive, that doesn't have the most explosive playmakers outside of like Lamar and Zay Flowers, let's see what Malik can do. And I'd love to see it. I'd love to see him, you know, those two guys being on the field at the same time, making plays together for Baltimore. It'd be nice.
Yeah, and I think you've got a chance now that Babin has not stayed healthy at all. Like, you make yourself, you know, you make enough of a an impression here. Like, I think your number's going to get called somewhere at some point.
Absolutely. I definitely think at the bare minimum, he's going to be a special teams guy. The bare minimum, he'll be on the roster for special teams, if anything else. But
whatever that is.
Yeah. But as far as, like, I think he's going to get significant offensive snaps. Like, I think he's that explosive, that talented. Like, he's going to get some snaps from game one, I believe.
Now, I am interested in seeing Marvin Harrison made a career out of not getting hit. No question. Mm-hmm. I am interested in seeing how the changes to the return rules change who does the returning and how often. Because there is some talk, basically, training camp. Like, they're sort of reevaluating. All right, who should be our kick returners? Perhaps even employing starters a little bit more because of how it's less risky.
Mm-hmm.
And look, maybe that's a place to make, like, that's a great place for him. Like, that's where he's problem.
Absolutely. Because it's less risky because guys aren't getting that full head of steam.
Yeah.
And there's going to be more returns.
Yep.
Like, you're going to get more chances to actually return the ball instead of, you know, 50 touchbacks every game. Like, you're going to get legit chances to return the football. And having a guy as elusive as Malik Cunningham, having a guy that knows how to make multiple people miss in one play is valuable. And Malik's one of those guys.
All right, that is going to do it for us. Appreciate you guys listening in here. You've been listening to The Drive on Untenable. See you.